many days are in August?
We're running out of days for tricks.
31.
31 in August.
31 in October.
He's days since September, Biden took over.
31. Okay, so that's 1, 2, 3.
I was working in the lab late one night.
Mr. Speaker!
You're at the intersection of business and politics. This is the 14th and G podcast from Melman Consulting. Now, here's our host, Dean Hinkson.
Thank you for setting your podcast dial to 14th and G. I am your host, Dean Hinkson. And we are over October. The cold November rain is ahead, and with it, our long national election is about to be over. I've run out of ways to say it's close. The Republican optimism, I think, is veering into over-exuberance. The polling averages look really good for Trump, especially if you think he'll overperform his polling for the third election in a row. The early vote numbers out of Nevada, Arizona, North Carolina, they look good for Republicans as well. But overinterpret all of that at your peril. The data take you only so far. Public office is for closers, and closing strong is the name of the game in any American election. That's why I've got Republican Bruce Melman and Democrat David Thomas to close this election out with me. We're going to cover what's left of 2024 in 24 minutes, and we're going to answer the five questions that I think are key to who is going to win. And so question number one, we started out when it was Biden versus Trump, referend who? Who is this going to be a referendum on? Who is seen as the candidate of change? It looks like Vice President Harris has done a pretty fair job of separating herself from the Biden administration to a greater extent than I would have thought possible, that she could be seen as the change candidate from her own administration.
Well, first of all, I feel like I'm sitting across from Brett Baer here that I have to take.
Dee's hair is magnificent.
You know, that opening was something here, Hinkson, and I expected something a little bit more fair and balanced out of you to open up here.
It was unafraid.
But you know what?
Unafraid.
I'm used to do it with you two knuckleheads, so I will tell people out there in the interwebs how it really is. Yes, so I think the first question here is, who will be the considered the change candidate this year? And normally you would say the guy who's not in the White House would be the change candidate, but it's not so easy this time around to make that determination here, because there are real reasons why you could point to Harris as the change candidate here. Bruce, why would you say that Donald Trump is the change candidate this time around?
Well, he didn't say there is nothing he can think of he'd do differently than the last 4 years. That's usually a useful way to say you will change things, which is what she said when asked the first time on The View.
That, of course, is not the question I just asked you, which is, why is Donald Trump considered the change candidate this time around? I'll try again.
He's the party out of power. He doesn't want four more years, although his 4 years aren't four more years like the last 4 years. They're like the 4 years before the 4 years. So he's change light, but if you want the next 4 years to be just like the last four, that's not change. If you want to do something different, even if it's change back, that's his theory of the case.
Or to put it in that Trumpian economy of language, she broke it, I'll fix it.
That's also a Bob the Builder trademark line.
Well, okay, so those are good points there, Bruce. But I will point out a few things why I think Harris is going to be considered the change candidate. Number one, Donald Trump has been in charge of the Republican Party for 9+ years at this point. She has been in charge of the Democratic Party for 103 days. Today is the 103rd day since Joe Biden dropped out of the presidential race here. 100 days versus 9 years. She's the change candidate. Number two, she is much, much younger. You know, when we were in here 3 months ago, you all were complaining about how old Joe Biden is. Now the oldest candidate in the world is Donald Trump. He's 78 years old. He assured everybody last week, though, I do want to reassure everybody, that he is way under 80, which, you know, we have that going for us.
As are you.
I guess that's true. Thank you. But Harris, of course, just turned 60 years old. She is the youngest baby boomer we'd ever have. You have to be born in 1965 or later. She was born in November 64. So she's still a baby boomer. But that's a generational change here. I'll give her the change candidate for that one. And then I think finally the vibe here. Look, we know what a Donald Trump campaign is, and this one certainly is a doozy. They're angry. They're vengeful. They're not a nice place to be around. Just go look at that rally up in Madison Square Garden and all the yahoos that were up there. Vice President Harris is running on something that we haven't seen in a while, which is hope, which is a joyful a vibe about her. And I think that's what Americans are longing for. So I'm saying she is the change candidate this round. Take it to the bank.
I don't know, Bruce. He's salting the fries at McDonald's. He's swinging up on the garbage truck in his safety vest. The guy looks like he's having fun.
He thinks, you know why? I'll say this. Maybe it's because it's Halloween. The guy has put on more costumes in the last week of this campaign than I've ever seen. It's making me long for the days of the long red tie and the baggy suit.
Well, look, at the end of the day, the polling seems to go back and forth. Maybe how you ask the question as to who's seen as the change candidate. But I think all of us agree. The exit polls are going to say one of them was seen as likelier to bring the sort of change people want. Whoever wins on that in the exit poll is going to be the next president.
And the biggest issue for change, question number two, who's better on the economy? Whether you want to go right track, wrong track, you know, all this polling says Americans are broadly dissatisfied with where the economy is. That goes to inflation, cost of living. Wage growth just hasn't kept up. This is the Biden-Harris economy, and I've not heard Vice President Harris articulate a economic vision much different from what we've had for the last 4 years. Am I wrong on that, David?
Look, I think the economy is really baffling to me here because the economy is doing well. We've had the soft landing here. You look at your stock portfolio, Dean, it's going through the roof. I know you're happy about how things are going here. Inflation is at back at a the low before the pandemic here. Unemployment is low. The economy is cooking here, but people don't feel it. It's a challenge. And that is why on this point, I'll cede to Bruce that the American public, certainly polling shows, trust Donald Trump, God knows why, more on the economy.
Well, so look, the Gallup stat that was kind of eye-popping for us, and we put it into all the speeches that we're doing together. We also put it into our six-chart Sunday. If you go back to 1952, when Gallup asks voters, what's the most important issue this election? The person, the party whose candidate leads on the most important issue for that election has won every time. This election, it's the economy by more than 2-1, inflation being baked into the economy. If we all wake up, you know, a couple days after the election and find Donald Trump has won, the likeliest reasons are number one, she was seen as 4 more years, the incumbent party, and incumbent parties have been getting kicked out all over the world since the pandemic. And number two, because people don't feel the vibes, DT's right on the data, but people don't feel it. The number one issue that you'll have seen a multiracial working class revolt against prices. So who is the change candidate was a coin flip. Who's seen as better on the most important issue, which is the economy? Trump's been leading in almost all the polls, usually by near double digits.
Well, you got a few other sort of big issues out there. And one of the big, I think, X factors in what we're seeing in the early vote, how this might play out on Election Day, are some of these ballot measures on abortion, on reproductive rights. It's on the ballot in Arizona. It's on the ballot in Nevada. And Nebraska, I believe. And then the issue for the Republicans is for Republican voters is immigration and the state of the border. Which of those are going to be a silver bullet for one of these candidates that might really help them in the voting?
Well, the interesting thing here is that what Bruce correctly pointed out is the economy being the number one issue. Number two and number three are abortion and immigration, and those are two issues that always bring out a lot of passion in people. And this year, certainly, that is no exception here. On the issue of abortion, for the past 2.5 years since the Supreme Court came down with the Dobbs decision overturning Roe v. Wade, Democrats in every election have turned out in higher numbers. Why? To push back against this loss of this fundamental right that had been around for 50 years. And we saw it in ballot initiatives in places pretty conservative. Ohio, Kansas, Kentucky, all passed initiatives enshrining the issue of choice in their constitutions. You're right, Dean. It is on the ballot in Arizona and Nevada. I think it's going to make a difference in those two states here. And I think when I talk to candidates out on the road here, they say there's still that motivation amongst Democratic voters to turn out to push back. So I think it's going to continue to make a big difference for Democratic voters here. And it's something that Harris is trusted way more than Trump on. Double digits. She's ahead on who do you trust more on the issue of choice.
People are concerned about the economy, Bruce, but they are emotionally ripshit about the border.
Well, look, so I thought really cleverly, the people who do the polling for NBC News, which is Public Opinion Strategies, and our buddy Bill McInturf, the way they did it, instead of what's the most important issue, is there any single issue that you find so important that nothing else matters? That's the proverbial single bullet. When they ask it that way, it's not the economy, number one. It was abortion at 22%. The second place is immigration. And you're absolutely right. People feel as if we have lost control of the southern border. The Democratic Party's movement on this issue has been extraordinary. Kamala Harris in 2020 was in favor of decriminalizing illegal entry on the southern border, providing health insurance for those who showed up who are not citizens and claimed asylum. And we saw over 4 years with millions of people brought into the country and taxing public infrastructure in a lot of, you know, all of a sudden they were no longer being stuffed in Texas. They were coming to New York. Well, New York doesn't like that anymore. A huge shift on this issue. I think to DT's point, just like it's easy to wake up the next day and say they found her the incumbent, that's why she lost. Or you wake up the next day and to say people are just pissed about prices. If we 2 days afterwards say it was a historic gender gap, extraordinary turnout by women, abortion, you know, the Dobbs decision weirdly was the gift that kept on giving to the Democratic Party electorally, totally could see that. And likewise, if at the end of the day it was too little, too late of a pivot by Vice President Harris and the Biden administration on their refugee and asylum policy, that also would completely compute with what we're seeing and what we're feeling.
So elections, you have to remember, elections are not run in a vacuum. And some of us were on a text chain yesterday, Bruce, talking about Vice President's rally at the Ellipse. And they're, you know, I think GPS pings were, something like 35,000 people. An enormous crowd.
I think I was left off that text chain. who's on this text chain here?
This is a Republican.
It was,
text chain.
Guess what? It was 52,000
people. 52,000
people.
Yep. Enormous crowd.
Right.
But it reminded me of.
Is DT going full spicy at this point?
It reminded me of the Red Rocks Amphitheater in Colorado in 2012, where Mitt Romney had this enormous crowd turnout and rally. And my only point is, these elections, these rallies, it's these crowds, it's all well and good, but execution and turnout and get out the vote matter. And my other big X factor, got to run through the tape, and the big X factor here is the money. Vice President Harris has raised $1 billion since she got the nomination. She has a cash advantage on Trump. And at this point, that is not so much relevant for ads as it is for turnout, for get out the vote. We're seeing these early vote numbers that I talked about at the top of the show. Who is doing the better job of turnout and get out the vote?
The way I've been watching this is a traditional way to run the last week of a campaign in a non-traditional way. Harris is doing the traditional thing here. She has raised, I bet by the end of this, once all the money's counted here, she will have raised over $2 billion, which is stunning. She's at 1.58, I think, at the last 1. reporting.
1.89 if you can, well, of hers,
yes,
right.
Of hers individually.
Got it.
You throw in the super PACs, it's higher than that. So she's got no shortage of money. But I think at this last week here, where it comes down to, and this is where she's taken a very different route than Donald Trump, is she has 2,500 plus paid staffers, mostly who are in those swing states, those seven swing states that we're talking about. She has about 350 or so offices open up across the country, most of them in those swing states here. You know, that contrasts that with Donald Trump, who has subcontracted that work to Elon Musk. Now, Elon Musk may know how to shoot off a rocket and land it on a platform in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico, but does he know how to get a bunch of retirees in the villages to vote before Election Day? Like, I'm taking my bet on the traditional way to turn out voters will be the difference in this campaign. Democrats have never been as excited as they are right now to vote. And I think the difference is going to come out when they start counting the ballots.
Bruce, the problems with the Republican ground game are pretty legendary at this point. It was terrible in 2020. It wasn't that great in the 22 midterms, a red wave forecast that never materialized. It's probably too early to say Republican ground game problems have been fixed, but are there things out there you see that are that are hopeful for, you know, fixing some of these problems so Democrats don't bank huge leads that are insurmountable on Election Day?
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. You know, I see reasons that the Republicans might be hopeful and reasons the Republicans might be terrified. You look at over the last 4 years, the registration, the voter registration gaps that the Republicans faced in places like Pennsylvania and Nevada have been more than cut in half, and North Carolina have been more than cut in half. So early on, they were registering voters. That's really good. At the same time, the magnification of Republican parties all around the country has traded, you know, you gain passion and you lost professionalism. In Michigan, they went bankrupt. In Arizona, they hired the cyber ninjas to audit 2020. And apparently the cyber ninjas came back and said Biden won by more than they thought the first time. And that was the people they hired. In Nebraska, they endorsed against all of the incumbents. If you're a state party, you have one job. Get your incumbents reelected. Don't endorse against, you know, throw the bums out like they're your bums. There was a story in Wired today. There was a story in The Guardian last week. Now, big asterisk, The Guardian, and for that matter, Wired, but suggesting some number of these, you know, hired hacks who Musk has brought in to knock on doors don't know why they're being hired. You know, they're being held in windowless vans without food, and they're being told that, you know, their rent won't get covered. Musk, to DT's point, has certainly been successful, but the first times he launched the rockets, they all blew up. And the first time he tried to put out EVs, they didn't quite work. And the first year or two, he's taken over X, not so successful. He has iterated and found ways as an entrepreneur in non-political worlds to figure stuff out over time. We'll find out if he understands get out the vote the first time. I'm with DT. Talk to me in a week and we'll know. But if I'm Republicans, there are reasons to be very worried.
The only other thing I'd add there, Bruce, and that was a great summation of everything that has been going on here. Elon Musk has been ordered to appear in court in Philadelphia today because he keeps offering $1 million to people at rallies to register to vote and vote for Donald Trump, which is patently illegal. So, again, this is sort of the Muskian way, I guess, is I'm going to, you know, break China here and I'm going to break the rules here. Well, now he's breaking laws in Pennsylvania. We'll see.
If Ed McMahon and the Publishers Clearinghouse can get away with it, I think Elon's going to be just fine. Well, one of the
other. You are correct.
You are correct. Yes. Yes. The other big thing we don't know, alluded to at the top of the show, is the polling. If you look at the final national RCP average in 2016, it was Clinton plus 4.3. In 2020, it was Biden plus 7.9. Right now, it stands at Trump plus 0.4, four-tenths of a point. Part of what's fueling this optimism on the Republican side is Donald Trump historically under polls. I think Biden ended up winning the national popular vote by about 4 points. When he was up close to 8 in the final average of polls. Has polling been fixed? Has polling do pollsters account for what's been a historical error? The shy Trump voter, call it whatever you want. How much can we trust these? And I've never seen as many polls around an election. I mean, all seven battlegrounds and national polls. I mean, right up until the end, they're still coming in a dozen a day.
Yeah, boy, we're in the wrong business, Dean. Look, you're right. In 2016 and 2020, pollsters did not find those elusive Trump voters or quiet or shy or whatever you want to call them. But I'd also point out they got it wrong in 2022 when they were predicting a red wave was going to sweep over the country. And Democrats turned out in higher numbers, which makes things even more confusing. Bruce, you did some number crunching here on what if today's polls were off by the same amount they were in 2022, Harris wins 6 out of those 7 swing states. If they are off by as much as they were missing Republican voters in 2020, Donald Trump sweeps every one of those swing states here. So what I take away is that, look, I think it truly is an equally divided election here. I was looking at the New York Times polls for today before we came in. They've got the national poll, Harris up one, and then they have Nevada, Wisconsin, North Carolina, and Michigan even. Trump up one in Pennsylvania, Trump up one in Georgia, Trump up three in Arizona. I mean, they're all within the margin of error. Who the heck knows?
I echo my Democratic colleague. Nobody has any idea. Now, I would note the pollsters are doing their best. They've definitely made adjustments. It's not good for their business to consistently get it all wrong. Otherwise, why hire them if they're no better than a Ouija board? We're going to find out. They tell you they've made meaningful adjustments. One of the more interesting questions, and we'll know this months later, is there hurting going on? Like, one of the theories is maybe the pollsters don't want to be an outlier for fear of ostracization. So everybody's calling it tied because everybody has kind of come all into the exact same model and the same expectation of what the electorate looks like. And that rather than our not knowing the winner for the 9-week slog that we wrote about, maybe as happened with Hillary Clinton, maybe by Wednesday after the election, it's like, wow. Somebody swept them. Turns out it's crystal clear. And for the reasons that we talked about earlier, whether it's the economy or abortion or immigration or who's the change candidate, it's a totally foreseeable sweep. We're flying a little bit blind.
Well, gentlemen, we're inside of a week to election day. It's prediction time. I'll go first. I'm predicting a Republican sweep. It's going to be President-elect Donald Trump. You got a Republican Senate. And I think the Republicans are going to hold the House of Representatives by a larger than forecast margin. They may even enlarge their current majority by a couple of seats. That's what I see.
DT, you want to blue wave it up?
Not so fast, Hinkson. Not so fast.
Coach Corso over here.
Look, I think Kamala Harris is going to win. And I think it's going to be an exciting night for the country. I hope it's not drawn out for a long time into December like my old boss Al Gore had to go through. I think it's going to be an exciting moment and a time to turn the page. I think as a result of that, the House will flip and Hakeem Jeffries will be the next Speaker of the House from Brooklyn, New York. First African-American Speaker of the House. Also a first and an exciting first for this country. The Senate, it's hard for me to piece together. I can make a case for every one of those Dems who are running and why they're going to win. Hard to see winning every one of them, though. I am, as we've discussed before, keeping my eyes on Nebraska. It's not like the sleeper race anymore, because now I think everybody's talking about Nebraska. And I'll leave you this. Here's how I know who's going to win here. We finished up the World Series last night. It was New York against a team from California. Who is the most identifiable New Yorker we know? Donald Trump. Who is... from California, Kamala Harris. Oh, wow. The Dodgers win. Harris is winning. Take it to the bank.
Who needs pollsters? My prediction, the triple flip in the ultimate change election, the ultimate anti-incumbent year, the party controlling the Senate, thrown out. The party controlling the White House, thrown out. The party controlling the House, thrown out. And while we've had all three turn over in 1952, led by Eisenhower, with Republicans taking over all three, in 1932, with FDR taking over all three, we've never seen both the House and the Senate flip in the same year, but in opposite directions. I think election night, we learned the Republicans have picked up the Senate. Before the weekend, Donald Trump is declared by the Associated Press to have recaptured the White House. And we won't know the House until December. It will be single digits. I think DT's prediction of Jeffries ultimately being the speaker, at least at the start of the Congress, is right. But all of the crazy and all of the recounts will be House in California around Thanksgiving. Happy holidays.
Well, in many ways, Tuesday is just the beginning of data and policy and personnel to break down. And we will be here back with you to break it all down. Republican Bruce Melman, Democrat David Thomas. Thank you for joining me on 14th and G.
Happy Halloween, guys.
Yep, happy Halloween.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast, brought to you by the lobbying firm of Melman Consulting. For more, just type 14th and G podcast into your favorite search engine or look for 14th and G wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe.
Beam me up, Mr. Speaker.